Paul, Elliot, 5 years. Yesterday, 5 year anniversary of the podcast. Congratulations.
Wow. That is a long time. 1 year, 2 year, that's a way. 5 years. That's a haul.
It feels like yesterday, and it also feels like 15 years. I don't know how to describe it. It's crazy. We've been reading this series for 5 years also, effectively. So
it's true.
Wouldn't trade it for anything. Excited for five more. There we go.
And a massive shout out to those of you guys out there, listeners and chatters in our YouTube and Discord, who've been around for 3, 4. Some of you guys have been around here since the beginning, 5 years. It's been awesome to build some of those friendships with you guys over the internet and see some recurring chats coming up in our Discord, or at the very least have you off in the secret channels of our Discord laughing at us while we try to figure out what is going on in this crazy world of Brandon's over the course of 5 years.
It is funny you mentioned it also, because just yesterday I had a couple friends over and briefly mentioned the podcast, and they were like, oh, we want to see some, and pulled up the first episode just yesterday. And man, I mean, a lot has changed in definitely our understanding of fantasy and the Cosmere, but just in life, like, we all look totally different. I feel like we all, so much has happened in 5 years, and it's just been an awesome journey. Definitely journey before destination. There we go. True theme for the story and the podcast.
I appreciate both of you being with me for 5 years and our listeners. And let's get to the episode. Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 253, and we are covering chapters 76 and 77. In Wind and Truth, Paul, how are you?
So good. Wrapping up day 6. This is a big day. This feels like one of the, you know, we're really getting there. We're about to start day 7. It feels like it's starting to get real, you know, starting to get real crazy. People listening probably like, oh no, y'all don't know anything yet, but it's starting to pick up. We're starting to get to some big moments. So one of the most excited times I've been to talk about this with y'all. That doesn't feel right to say. I don't think that's right, but
it didn't sound right. If that makes you feel any better,
it was not right. I'm excited to talk about this more so than some of our other episodes, because these chapters are pretty good.
I'm also in the camp of, it feels like it's picking up, but I don't think it is. I think there are plenty of people who have read the book who, even by day 8, I don't think the actual events of the book are even going to start happening by even day 8 or day 9. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing fine. This was another one of those days where had a little bit of a rough day at work and I'm in desperate need of some fantasy escape. So happy to talk about a fantasy world and dive into some fun concepts and see what our Stormlight Archive characters are getting up to.
Sounds good. We have the end of day 6, like Paul said, with chapters 76 and 77. Elliot, do you have a summary for us?
I do. 2 chapters only, but a lot packed into these chapters. So we'll see if I can summarize it for you here, at least somewhat succinctly. Shallan, we start with Shallan, chapter 76. She originally was watching one of the scenes here in the spiritual room from the outside, but then we kind of left her where she jumped into the scene. She arrives in the scene in the dying body of a singer, not the most pleasant place to be, I guess, but she gets to see and experience firsthand Ba'edel Mishram, who is going around healing these singers who are injured and dying. Shallan gets to have a fairly lengthy conversation with Baido Mishram, lots of nuggets in there. And then ultimately, Mishram realizes that it's Shallan. I have a lot of questions for you guys about what's happening here in this part of the scene, actually. And then they kind of duke it out a little bit. And then Odium's attention is brought to them. And they start jumping out, fleeing, running away. Things start, kind of start to fall apart at that point because they've drawn the attention of Odium. Second half of chapter 76 is Adolin and Yonagon as they play more towers and are learning more strategy lessons. But ultimately, at the end of that segment, the news is brought to them that the army of reinforcements is not coming. There's been problems and they are not going to get backup. So what are they going to do about that? Chapter 77 is Dalinar. Dalinar and the Stormfather are continuing to duke it out as they figure out what Dalinar is going to do here. Stormfather's still trying to get him to leave the spiritual realm, even tries to make a deal with him. I'll show you this if you get out of here, kind of thing. They're still fighting it out here. They do get to witness Ahari Etiam, the moment where the heralds forsake their oath, leave their blades, and there's some big reveals in here. Honor is there. They have some interesting conversations about it. A few nuggets get dropped, and then ultimately things fall apart again, like the vision thing, and they have to. Well, I guess Dalinar moves on, right? So he grabs the Stormfather to use as an anchor to get to a future vision. And the Stormfather is not happy about all of this, but Dalinar kind of forces his way through it. I think that gets us to the end of chapter 77.
Sounds good. Paul, do you have two words out of those two chapters?
I do. And as we hear the summary, there's a lot going on in these chapters, but the best words I could think of are bipolar and pinnacle. I think pinnacle is one that people will laugh at. I feel like we're leading up to some pinnacle moments, but there's still 3 full days left, and so I'm sure people listening to this will laugh, as this is nearly, like, we're not even nearing the pinnacle yet or something like that. But moments seem to be getting bigger, stakes seem to be getting higher, Stormfather threatening to leave or leaving, Mishram being in play, there's a lot going on. Bipolar is specifically about Baido Mishram. I can't seem to figure this character out, and I'm very eager to talk further with y'all about it.
Elliot?
I almost went with a word like bipolar. I thought about that for Baido Mishram exactly, so I was on the same wavelength for sure. The two words I am going to pick, though, for these two chapters are freedom and chance. And freedom was kind of picking up on Shallan has some ramblings and wonderings in this chapter about the freedoms that the singers are afforded in their armies versus the discipline and order of a human army, and has kind of a bit of a moment of wonder if having a more loose rein on things is a better way to do it. She almost wonders, like, am I in the wrong army? Like, kind of moment, which was kind of interesting. And then freedom, I can also tie over to Dalinar, because Dalinar really wrestles with, I want to talk with you guys about this. Is he letting the people around him have the freedom of choice? Or is he just using his physical strength to bully everyone into doing it his way? And is that okay? Is that not okay? Freedom. Chance. So Chance comes up in the Adolin section. Adolin and Yonagon are talking strategy, and they're kind of listing off the things that, what are factors that can cause an army with less numbers to defeat an army with more numbers? And one of the elements they talk about is chance. But I thought that was kind of a good contrast to the rest of the chapters around here. There's a lot of strategy going on in these other chapters, a lot of kind of big decision moments. And then here's Adolin kind of off in the corner, kind of going, but you know, even the best army with the best strategy and soldiers can get overthrown by just chance. So I'm actually kind of curious to see how chance is going to play a role in the coming chapters, if at all. We'll see. But it got me thinking differently.
Sounds good. We can jump in to the Mishram stuff after we cover our epigraphs for day six. And we got quite a few. So, well, they're lengthy. We don't have quite a few. We have like six, but each of them are pretty chunky. So bear with me. You now know of my sins in full. You now also know of my revelations, if they may be called that in full. Each of my visions is here, each experience of my past that shaped me. Both have as much detail as I can remember. My life, my reign, my sorrow, my glory. It is not my goal to begin a new religion or to inspire a division in Voronism. However, I insist that when I was at my darkest moments, there was something there with me. And it was not the being we call the Almighty. He is dead. And even if he were not, I would find his actions increasingly suspect. I realize this is in a way ridiculous. I, who proclaim a God to be dead, am also the one who rejects the idea that no God exists. And yet my very being, soul, mind, body, rebels at the idea that nothing out there cares. It must. Yasna says that the existence of an all-powerful and all-loving God must be questioned by the simple existence of injustice done in life to the innocent, such as the child who dies from disease. Yasna's argument is probably the greatest against what I teach, and so it must be addressed. I am not certain I have the philosophy, the words, or the experience to do so with the respect it deserves. But I will say that for me, the existence of something that cares and can, after death, make up for injustices in life is not the question, but the answer. From the epilogue of Oathbringer by Dalinar Colin, excerpt used at his tribunal in absentia for the appeal filed on his behalf by supporters after his excommunication from the Voron Church as evidence of his continued heresy. I guess we are getting Voronism's greatest hits on these epigraphs, because we had The Way of Kings, we had Words of Radiance, now we're getting Oathbringer. We've got Rhythm of War to go. So, Paul, how'd you enjoy our Oathbringer excerpts?
This felt like a little bit like a breath of fresh air, because we knew what it was coming from. We knew like what it was. We mostly know, like, we knew who like the speakers were, and it ends with Dalinar's words in Oathbringer. So it feels very relevant to the characters, feels relevant to our understanding. Sometimes you get, you know, you get these epigraphs that are just like cryptic, and you're trying to figure out, who is this relating to? Who is this about? Who is saying this? To whom? And it's just like a big puzzle. This didn't feel like a puzzle. It felt like an adjacent philosophical pondering that might go along with some of Dalinar's struggles that we'll talk about in this chapter. And I'm sure you could apply it to other characters as well, or just you, the reader. So it felt less mystery, more thinking, you know, which I think is a change of pace, but I have to say that, it was good. I can't think of a time where I haven't enjoyed epigraphs in some capacity, at least. I think they're very fun, a very fun avenue that Sanderson gets to play with to add another layer of thinking to the story.
I think the only time Elliot didn't enjoy epigraphs was
Well of Ascension,
but that was the grand irony, because you made the assumption that you'd already read them when you had it, and it bit ya. All right, go ahead, Elliot.
Did not enjoy those epigraphs. These ones, yeah. So these are philosophy, theology. Let's go. This is my jam. Love this kind of stuff. Getting into it. I will say reading these epigraphs is a little bit weird, because we're retreading some ground that we know, that we've been on before, which is kind of the skeptic Yasna versus religious Vorons, and then kind of Dalinar kind of in his own middle ground perhaps. But in this fictional world, we see presented an argument, a discussion that I've had a lot in the real world of the whole loving God question. And it's a little weird to try and process that in a fictional realm. It's hard not to read this and immediately start kind of processing through my own personal beliefs in the real world, but to do so in the context of a fictional doesn't make any sense and doesn't process. So my brain's getting confused and wanting to go down paths I don't think it should.
I can agree with that, Elliot. It almost reminded me, and it reminded me of when we were reading Elantris. I'm not going to say any spoilers or anything else about Elantris, but that religion is kind of a major theme, like an in-world religion is a large talking point within the story. And it had me thinking of, you know, like the discussions or thoughts you have in real life, I'd say heavily impact probably how you read this, how you read these epigraphs, probably how you read Elantris and other things. And so kind of separating the two is something I've had to do, but it definitely like turns that part of my brain on, you know, that like, you know, those questions that we have in life. Absolutely. So I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, absolutely notice that. I'm sure most people listening have had those thoughts as well, in some capacity or from some perspective.
I have a really hard time not reading it as Brandon Sanderson talking to like some of his readers personally. I like Brandon Sanderson's obviously Mormon, and a lot of his readers are like a-religious, and so I have a hard time reading this, and it's not like a thinly veiled message from Brandon to some of his readers. that's kind of how I read it.
I think Brandon would get mad at you for saying that, because he's always very clear of like, I just write and whatever you draw from this is up to you. I'm not putting anything there for you. You know, that's his whole thing. And, you know, I'm not going to say that's not true, but, you know, any good story, you have to put in, you know, impactful elements, which are usually involves making statements, whether that's a loose statement or a firm one, you know. So, that's kind of tough. But I definitely see what you mean, Trevor. But I bet he'd get on to you for that if you were talking to him right now. I think he'd combat you saying, nope, I did not. That's you. You're thinking that I just wrote the story as the story, you know.
Anything else from our epigraphs? All righty.
Sorry. Right. Nothing else really to say about it, but I wanted to ask, as we continue, as we go into day 7 and onward, do y'all think we're going to keep getting a lot of these from our previous 4 like in-world notable books, or do you think we're going to see other stuff or a mix, or where do y'all think we're going? I feel like this being in day 6, it makes me think that we're going to see a lot more relevant stuff of like the Way of Kings, Oathbringer related material, in-world material. I feel like we're going to see a lot of that as we lead up to the climax, the finale of this book.
We're going to get Rhythm of War in day 8, and then we're done, right? Because we had Way of Kings in day 2, Words of Radiance in day 4, and between we had
Knights of Wind and Truth in day 1.
1 or 2, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we might go back to Knights of Wind and Truth maybe day 9. Ooh,
yeah.
That'd be fun. I'd be down
day
for
10.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be down for that. Anyways, pretty exciting. I'm frankly really excited for the Rhythm of War stuff if we do continue the trend.
I do think we'll get one more anonymous letter. I don't know who it'll be from, obviously, but we'll get one more letter somewhere.
Ooh, what if it's from Valor?
Finally.
That'd be awesome.
She's come up more times than I was expecting, which was zero in this book. So
there you go. This doesn't fit in the slightest, but I want a letter from Whimsy. I think that'd just be fun. Anyways, we can continue with the real discussion now.
Co-authored by Whimsy and Val.
Oh yeah, I would like to see someone
What's the co-shard of Whimsy and Valor?
Oh dear,
I would love to see that. Oh my goodness,
recklessness.
Brandon, we need another book. We need another book where you have that.
All right, Mishram, Mishram. Shallan goes into a vision, talks to old Ba'ino Mishram about singers and Odium. Does Odium care about us? No. And then halfway through the conversation, Mishram turns around and says, I know who you are, Lightweaver. So where do you guys want to start?
Okay. I'll start off a little bit. I want to talk first about Mishram, Ba'edo Mishram as a character, as maybe like, I would kind of want to talk motives, talk whatever. So my impression from this chapter is that, let's say hypothetically you have an unprovoked Ba'edo Mishram, very calmed down after a good day, waking up in a nice beautiful morning, Ba'edo Mishram. No one has stepped in the way or anything. Seems pretty kind, pretty nice, like healing these people and things like that. And it seems like noticing Shallan was, I said bipolar in my words. I feel like I could have said like triggered or something like that, of like seeing Shallan like triggered that like rage in Ba'edo Mishram. And then obviously she says a lot of very mean things to Shallan, wanting to see her bones break and pop out of socket and all these things, you know. Lots of unkind words, one might say. But before the like rage came out, you do get a picture of this like powerful but helpful for her cause, Ba'edo Mishram. I was curious what y'all thought about that, because before we've maybe heard mention of something like that, but not seen anything. Everything we've seen has been like the, oh no, this is a villain. This is a villain. Very evil. I'm not going to say this didn't make me feel the same way still, but it showed a different side, and I want to hear your thoughts about it.
So I took it less as bipolar and more as something has happened to Ba'edo Mishram since this time. And so old Ba'edo Mishram, walking through the battlefield after the battle, healing some singers, and then Shallan asks that Ba'edo Mishram comes across a human, and Shallan says, hey, can you heal him? Can you do what you can for him? And she says, and Ba'edo Mishram says, no, I can't. And even if I could, I wouldn't, but I will sing for him. And so Ba'edo Mishram sings and lets him pass into the beyond peacefully or whatever. And then there's the trigger of current day Ba'edo Mishram turning around and very specifically talking to Shallan and yelling at or whatever. So to me, that said, current day Ba'edo Mishram is, I'm going to burn every human on the planet, blah, 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 torture. I just want to hear you scream, blah, blah, blah. Past day Ba'edo Mishram was, I'll sing for this guy to pass him into the beyond, even though I'm fighting against him. There, something has happened to Ba'edo Mishram or with Ba'edo Mishram, whatever that is. So it's less bipolar and more a timeline thing of, she wasn't always this hateful nemesis.
Well, and we already have hints at what that event might be, right? The recreants. We know that's the point in time where the singers become trapped in their bodies as parchment. And we've been told that it was related to Mishram. somehow. So seems like not very difficult calculus to come to the conclusion that that switch is going to happen at where it looks like we're headed next, which right. is, okay, what are the real details behind the recreants?
Yeah. And all I would do is just highlight that I think it's less bipolar and more current day.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right, Trevor. I feel like I should add the disclaimer. I'm not, my word wasn't necessarily chosen because I think Biodomishrum has bipolar disorder, but because there's a super huge change, super fast. And wondering why that is. And my guesstimation, it feels like the trajectory we're on is to maybe not fix this, but find the root of it and see if they say, like, you know, if Biodomishrum was a power that could potentially match or usurp Odium's, like, that's a weapon we want to have on our side or something, right? And so at least harnessing, you know, finding the root cause of the disdain and trying to alleviate, fix it, or something, come to some form of an agreement. That feels like the trajectory we're on.
Yeah, when towards the end of the vision, when Renarin and Relaine jump in to help Shallan, and Renarin and Relaine are like clearly on the same side, supporting each other, and Biodomishrum turns to them and it like breaks her brain that that Renarin and Relaine are like together and on the same team, so, and confronting her, and she's like, what? So, and then Relaine says, makes a claim to Biodomishrum, you want to be found by us. Where is your prison? You want to be found by us and not by our enemies, which made me think we might be going down the path of allying with Mishram more than I thought before this chapter. We might be going to try to rescue her more than whatever we were doing before. I guess, like, you know,
destroying her. And is the key to that potentially Renarin and Relaine? The fact that we have them in the party here, that becomes a possibility?
And as proof that it can be done, that you can have a good relationship between humans and singers.
Yeah.
That's the impression that I had, is like seeing humans and singers like allied and working together and like caring for each other is like, did not compute, obviously, and is like, okay, if that is a possibility, then that probably changes Mishram's way of thinking, way of understanding. I think so. That felt like the key. It was really cool also to see Relaine step in. Relaine has been one of those characters that I've always appreciated, and, you know, we've been watching. We had all sorts of theories and stuff. Relaine going to be the third bondsmith and all these things, you know, all sorts of fun stuff throughout this whole story. And I've always wanted Relaine to get more of a role. I always thought it was really cool. And so it's really neat to see him kind of stepping in here. One of the elite, you know, it's an elite crew that's here in the spiritual realm. So it's really cool to see him stepping up, and like, it seems like he's going to be an extremely integral, maybe the most integral important piece to this puzzle than anyone else.
Odium jumps in at the end of the vision, and I couldn't help but think back to the Taravangian diagram thing where Renarin is always the X factor in the diagram. So I wonder if Odium is about to jump in and, you know, try to figure out whatever's going on, whatever that looks like. I don't know what Odium showing up in the spiritual realm is about to do, but Odium maybe is about to be confronting Renarin for the first time in this book. That's a thought that crossed my head.
Frankly, I'm extremely eager to see that. Ever since, what was it, the end of Oathbringer, that we get the information drop that Renarin is like a gray area, the one area that he can't really predict. Ever since then, I've really been wanting to know what Renarin's contribution to potentially the downfall of Odium would be, or his role in the story, as he has a very unique opportunity. So I'm really eager. I feel like we have been following Shallan, and I feel like it's, you know, Shallan is obviously still here in a major part of this. It definitely feels like Renarin and Rulaine are going to be the front runners probably in these next couple days in the spiritual realm of like the movers and the shakers in this story, either with Odium or with Biodomestrium or both.
Elliot, any predictions on Odium peeking into the spiritual realm to look for them? What does that even mean? I don't even know.
I was thinking that that's not actually going to grow into much more than he's going to chase them off of Mishram and they're just going to reconvene elsewhere. And that's not actually going to be a confrontation or anything. It was just they interacted with Mishram. They played their hand a little too far. They tweaked too many things and it brought the attention of Odium. They're going to run away and that's going to be it.
Okay. Fair enough. At the very end, like the last three sentences, Shallan is separated from everybody else, from Pattern, Testament, Relay, and Renarin. And the last thing she hears is, we'll pull you out. But they can't yet. So she's split, confronting Odium or something like that by herself. So maybe we'll get that at the beginning of Day 7. Anything else for the Shallan, Relaine, Renarin stuff?
One other note that I had. There was something that Mishram says that I actually thought was kind of noteworthy. She says it a couple of times. She says, he does not love us. And Shallan immediately assumes that she's talking about Odium and telling the singers, you know, Odium is not actually on your side. But Mishram never actually says that. And it kind of left me wondering, is that the correct assumption? Is this, he does not love us, he does not take care of you, I will do so? Could that be referencing something else? Someone else? Or is it as straightforward as Shallan assumes it is, and it's just Odium?
I think it is Odium, because one of like the male singers in the vision talks about how Odium sent Yelignar and it killed his brother or whatever, and then that is a rebuttal to the Yelignar thing. So I think it is talking about Odium, and it's just further illustrating the division between Bought in Amishram and Odium and how those two are going to be adversaries moving forward. Alrighty. Adolin and Yonagon. We haven't seen them in at least a couple chapters. Our backup army is not showing up. Surprising absolutely nobody, I think. Everybody assumed that Adolin was on his own here. Go ahead.
I'm actually quite surprised it's taken this long for the other shoe to drop. I thought it was going to be right off the bat that they were going to go into battle and things were going to go badly immediately. And the fact that we've made it 6 days, I guess the battle didn't start right off the beginning, but a ways, and things have gone really well for Adolin in all these battles. They've been winning everything. So, yes, I think this was coming. It just took a while.
I think this is the pressure, prediction time. I think this is the pressure that needs to be put on Adolin for Yasna to make her decision. like tomorrow, yes, or whatever. So Yasna's about to make her decision or find out the info. I'm not needed here in Thalen City. I think this is going to be the pressure that Yasna has to go then help Adolin.
Because that could set up, we were talking about this either last episode or two episodes ago. We know that Sigzil is about to be under a lot of pressure as well. He's got Moash. He's got the other unmade just showed up. I don't know if he knows that yet, but
Moalak.
Well, Moalak is there. They saw that, but we know that Odium has sent El with
the Elf's Collar one. Yeah, the one that the
it's not Yelignar. It's
right. That it's the one that makes the oath, the Elf's Gates, and that's how they know that he's there.
Ah, why can't I think of this? Anyway. Yes.
Just spout off names.
Well, the other unmade, it's the one that we thought might have been in Shinovar for a little while, and then we got revealed to us that nope, it's actually with Odium and L, and they're like, oh, is it
Kemlerish or whatever?
No, that's the Dust Mother. The Black Fisher.
Oh, that's right.
The Black Fisher,
man.
Kemo Arish, I think, is the one that is going to be in Shinovar. That's yes. The only one that's unaccounted for at this point.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, why? This is going to bug me for the rest of this episode. We'll think of it later. Anyway, Sigzil's going to be under a lot of pressure. This could be the pressure on Adolin. Cue Yasna having to make a really tough decision.
Daigon Arthas.
Yeah. Mm, yes.
Maybe.
Daigon yes. Arthas.
I think that's right.
Daigon Thank Arthas. You. Thank you.
There we go. We can all rest easy now.
Yeah. I'm not going to keep thinking about it in case I'm wrong and talk myself out of Daigon Arthas.
It definitely feels like Sigzil was the one to draw the short straw on all this. Is the Thunderclast still there too? They named the Thunderclast, which I thought was really cool. I don't remember the name, but it was something really cool and epic. I remember that much.
If I'm not mistaken, the Thunderclass has already died twice. Like, he's taken it down twice, and the Thunderclass whole job is just, like, smash into the wall and die and get reborn and do it again.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was going to say, I knew it at least died once. There's a lot going on there, but I really enjoyed the playing of towers in this chapter. It felt like a really cool, you know, it's been a way that they've alluded to and said some loose things about, like, war planning and strategy and things like that, which has really intrigued me. But this felt a bit more in-depth, and it was really, really cool. Also, quick shout-out. I'd like to give a quick shout-out to Gazeboist, who Gazeboist has been listening to us for a while, but in our Discord, Gazebo has sent a game called War Chest, which is, like, people are saying is, like, the closest thing you have to Towers. Have to say, I have been playing this with Alex, my wife. It is really good, and it kind of feels it's a good comparison. It really is. Not exactly the same, whatever. There's not going to be a real Towers game, but very similar-ish in that you have a set number of, like, soldiers and supplies and things like that, and it's how you utilize them to over time win the war, right? I thought this example in this chapter was particularly interesting. It talks a lot about how, anyway, there were the three things that there are actually many things I could talk about. First, I actually want to say I really love one of the things that Adolin said. He's talking with Yonagon. And Yonagon is saying, you shouldn't keep playing where you always give me this big advantage, this big lead. And what Adolin responds with is saying, if you give me, 10 generals that can maintain and win with a, you know, an advantageous position, then, like, I can conquer the world. Like, you can do anything with that. It's learning how to not throw a lead. That is, like, a very valuable thing. And I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a really, really neat point. And then as well, he gives his like three examples of, I forgot exactly. Do y'all remember? I remember the third of which was chance, which Elliot touched on earlier, which was really a good point of just like random chance of someone slips in a spear, like in a shield line or whatever. And then you have a breaking point, and then things can really change from just a slip up or an accident like that. Also talking about all sorts of things like, I don't know, there's a lot with like sabotaging, thinking outside the box, not just like I line up my troops versus you lining up your troops, you know, like getting inventive. I really, really liked it. I don't know if y'all tuned into that as much, but that was, I absolutely loved that part. I was super invested in the game of towers they were playing.
Paul, Ivan, may seem like an odd question to start it. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy this scene?
Okay, well, I... Okay, so like if I'm thinking of the context of like the book overall, I can't say a 10, but I enjoyed it like Game of Towers.
Okay, good.
Like it was a 9. It was like if I start overthinking of like, oh, well, compared to the big pivotal moments in this storyline, like it doesn't compare, but I really enjoyed it. I think it was a 9. Like
so, yeah. So you enjoyed it enough to give me my bingo slot of a sport is created or mentioned. A 9. Come on, they're in depth playing towers in multiple scenes.
So the question is chess a sport?
Uh-oh, we might anger some listeners here.
Oh boy.
If you look at fun fact, have y'all ever seen how many calories a chess player burns in like a day of like a chess competition?
I have not.
I'm going to look this up to fact check myself, but if I remember correctly, it's near like 2,000 calories. Like it's like some crazy numbers.
Of like brain power?
Just a focus and concentration, like quite literally. I'm looking this up because I want to okay, it says according to a quick Google search, which people are debunking this already, but it says a player could burn up to like 4,000+ calories.
We'll go with it. It backs up my,
if that's the case, then I'd consider it a sport. As towers. So what does your bingo card say? Does it say it's invented or that it just exists?
It says, quote, a sport is mentioned or created. We've had this discussion before. I wasn't actually expecting this to go my way.
My instinct is that this is a board game, strategy board game, and not a sport. I don't think I could call this a sport. If they start talking a lot about serious towers competitions or something, maybe.
That's what I'm saying.
This is that people are really good players.
Right. But this is the board game on Roshar. Everybody does it across, like, in Azir, in, you know, Eerie.
Not everybody. Yonagon doesn't even know about it.
Well, because he's Yonagon. Right? But his bodyguards know about it. That's the point.
Okay. I don't think this is a sport yet. I'm not convinced.
The singers play it in Oathbringer. Yeah, because Kaladin has to teach it to him, and they're like, why don't I know this? I should know this.
I don't remember towers being mentioned back there, but do you think it's a sport? I understand it's been mentioned and that people play it. What's your argument that this is a sport? I just talked about chess, which is, we'll say that's unrelated. What's your argument for this being a sport? Because I like it. That's what you're trying to pull on.
Because it's on my bingo board. The short answer. But
I see.
They have to advocate
for it.
The argument that I would have to make is that chess is a sport. That would be the argument I would make, because that would be the equivalent here, because everybody plays it. We can move on. We don't need to dwell on this if we don't.
No.
I could weigh in, but I'm gonna let the chess players come after you guys instead of me for all of your comments. So we should move on.
I would call chess a sport before I'd call towers a sport.
You wouldn't say that if you were from Roshar. All right.
Yeah, because I wouldn't know what chess is.
Yonagon has some aluminum that fell from the sky.
Well, they have aluminum that they use on a bunch of their stuff, which comes up in conversation because Adolin's like, why aren't we using this in battle? This would be handy. Give me all your forks and knives and let me melt them down. But doesn't he add on to that to say, oh, and also we have a fallen star metal? And it's like ambiguous of whether that's aluminum or not.
I think that's where it came from. Maybe. He asked, where's all this aluminum coming from? And he's like, oh, it's from this star that fell in my previous predecessor's reign or whatever.
Ooh, is there aluminum in meteorites? I feel like I should know that.
Or was this like a outside influence, like the Skadrians dropped a little rocket ship of aluminum on
Maybe.
On Roshard held out?
Well, he says in that same conversation, oh, yeah, and by the way, we have a whole bunch of firsthand accounts of people visiting other worlds.
Yeah.
And I was like, and you're just bringing this up now?
In book five?
Right? We've been off world. We've been to other places and seen places where there are more world hoppers. We've recognized some of the world hoppers here. And then Yonagon goes and drops, oh, yeah, we have people that have gone and seen that. That I was a little surprised by that.
I did do a quick Google search, Elliot, where you can get all the truth and answers right away. And it does look like there is aluminum present in meteorites. Specifically, lunar meteorites have a much higher concentrations of aluminum, even metallic aluminum.
And in other fact checking, I think Trevor is right that he is saying the aluminum came from the fallen star, and they call it star metal.
Yeah. Which would also harken back to our star reference that we got with the Chasm Fiends. The Chasm Fiends call the Shattered Plains the land of fallen stars or whatever. There's got to be some outside influence dropping aluminum on Roshar to like help out, you know, like 10, 20 years
it's,
ago.
Exidwith is calling in airdrops of supplies. Yes,
aluminum airstrikes.
Yeah.
Anything else from the Adolin chapter? I keep having this feeling that Yonagon's going to die. Do you guys have that feeling?
I mean, it's setting it up pretty hardcore. Even in this chapter, I think they get, he keeps bringing up, will I ever get to use this in real battle? Will I ever get to do this? Will I ever get to live this? Will I ever get my chance? It definitely feels like it could be building to a Yonagon finds himself somehow accidentally on the middle of battle and has to make a, you know, choice to save Adolin and maybe sacrifice his life in the process. Something to that could easily be where this is going.
You know, being trained under one of the best duelists, right? And being, you know, wanting to really prove himself, step up. I think we should just throw him out there as honors champion on day 10. I think we should just, he's ready. It's his time to step up and prove himself. I think he should just go do that. I think that's his time to get his figure out the whole battle thing.
Where I think this is going is he's spent these hours doing all this theoretical stuff. And then when he has to control his units on the actual battlefield, and it'll mean sacrificing Adolin or saving the dome or whatever, he won't find it in himself to actually sacrifice Adolin, and it'll put all of Azir at risk or whatever, or he'll lose Azir and save Adolin or something like that.
I think that's a really, really great guess, actually, Trevor. I think there's going to be, you know, it's awesome to learn these like strategic things in towers or whatever, right? Like maneuvering an army, trying to make an advantage, all these things. But whenever you are really giving orders to put lives at stake, it's different. Like that's got to be a totally different point of consideration. And to put weight to it, I imagine it would be like a basically have Adolin be in that party that like is gonna make the risky maneuver to maybe better their position, but like they're probably not gonna make it type of thing.
Right.
And so yeah, that'll be interesting. I think it will either be that or there will be some opportunity, maybe both. Both could feasibly happen. Some opportunity for Yonagon to step into the battle in some capacity. I could totally see that happening as well. From the beginning, it feels like that's where it's been headed.
Elliot, in the outline you have, where did Maya go?
Oh, yeah. Maya's name comes up in the end of this chapter. Adolin just randomly thinks of her. Oh, wait, I wonder what she's off to. I can feel her distantly. And another kind of factor here in what might play out with these events is, will Maya be the cavalry that comes to save the day somehow? Is Jasnah going to play that role of cavalry to come save the day? Something's going to happen with Maya, but it's been a while since she left, so I don't know what it will be.
Yep. All righty. Dalinar chapter 77. We get to view Ahar Yet'Yam from an hour before the Oath Pact is broken for the first time. And it's Ishar and Honor having a chat before everybody shows up. And Honor's like, this isn't important enough for me anymore. Bye-bye.
First of all, as soon as this chapter came up and I saw the title Ahar Yet'Yam, I sat up straight, full attention.
You're locked in?
Well, yeah, I was locked in. That is for sure. Yeah. And this just felt like seeing the conversations I've always dreamed of seeing ever since we set foot out on this journey, like 5 years ago or whatever now. It's been so long. It's great. One, to see, so we have the like inner circle of heralds here. Dalinar is in the body of Chanarach. There's Yezrian and Ishar. Is it the three of them, right? Or is there another? I think it's the three of them for a while.
Yeah.
And then you have the conversation between Ishar and Honor. This is definitely, you know, you start this series and you're like, Honor is like the pinnacle good guy. And I feel like that's been steadily like that idea has kind of like waned. And then here you're like, yeah, and it doesn't seem like a great setup for Honor to be like, hey, sorry, I know we set up this whole deal and I'm gonna go now. You know, that this was tough. I'm still piecing together what to make of all this. This is long before the like day of Honor's death, Honor's shattering still. But there are some really interesting things here. For one, it sounds like my understanding is that Honor was holding on to some of the Herald's like pain and that he was kind of like sustaining them. Did y'all also understand that to be the case? That's what I was understanding. And that Ishar kind of sort of done that for at least Taln by the end of this chapter.
Yeah, I think so. When they surrender their blades, I think Ishar pulls some pain from the other heralds that surrendered their blades and not Taln.
That's right. Yeah.
And so that's why in modern day Ishar is like insane. Like I'm Honor, you're my champion. Like that, when we meet Ishar at the end of Rhythm of War, he is completely unintelligible. Not like Kalak, kind of like he's a little off-centered. No, Ishar is completely crazy.
Yeah. And it is like Ishar is stepping in as like a mini Honor. Like he is using his bondsmith powers in a way to emulate what their bond with Honor was. And that's just kind of crazy to me. Like, this is not something that I foresaw and not something that I understand. I didn't know that this is something that you could do as a bondsmith. It talks a little bit about that, right? Kind of like with connections that you have and things like that. And that's not something that I also expected from the side of honor, I guess. I can't say that I'm extremely surprised, but I am pretty surprised just because we've seen that so much with Odium taking away Pain and one of his, if not more, one of the unmade also like feeding off of or absorbing a target's pain, as made very evident with Vire or Moash. So that's something that caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting this whole, yeah, let me hold on to that pain for you, you know? And then I should let y'all respond first, but I have a random tangent thought as well.
That definitely drew my attention just because it sounded so much like Odium. Here, let me bear some of your pain, all of you. That's what Odium, yeah, like you just said, Paul, that's what Odium does. Why is Ishar all of a sudden doing that? I don't know.
So did y'all also come to the conclusion? Maybe I misunderstood. Honor was doing this before Ishar. Is that right? Or did Ishar start this? Because in my head, Ishar is doing this to try and step in for Honor, who was doing this for the Heralds in some capacity. And then after Honor left, they were like, okay, now we're kind of left high and dry. Ishar is going to somewhat step in as much as he can.
I didn't catch the detail one way or the other, Paul. You might be right. You might be wrong. I don't. Okay. I don't know if Honor was doing that during the Oath Pact, if that's what you mean.
Gotcha. If that's the case, if it doesn't stand up to you, then it's maybe more likely that I'm wrong about that. I guess because Ishar offered that, maybe I logically was like, oh yeah, that's what Honor had been doing, and Ishar is trying to fill those shoes. So that may not be the case.
I do have the page in front of me. I can't read all of it here in these moments, but Honor does say, I will no longer be aiding you as you go forward, heralds. So that might be where you're getting that, but I don't necessarily read into that he's doing the pain thing. The Ishar bit where he takes their pain is like a whole page later. It's still the same conversation, but a little later. It might be what's going on here, but I'm not sure.
I think that's something I probably assumed in the moment as we were reading about Ishar and how he does that. So I'm gonna rescind that and say that that's not what Honor was doing, but he was aiding the heralds. We don't really understand to what capacity, right? Whether it was like a physical aid or just like a, yeah, I don't think we understand the capacity, right?
And the very next thing that Honor says, I think is even more fascinating, because he says that line of, I will no longer be aiding you. The next thing he says is, I cannot afford to care any longer. I can't afford to care about any of you. I need distance. Yes. And then he disappears. It's like, what?
Yeah.
And then he's gone.
It felt like a bad breakup. Like, it literally felt like, I just
lamest excuse.
I need to focus on me.
Yeah, exactly. I just need some space. That's what it sounded like. And yeah, I was puzzled by this. I was expecting, if we're seeing the moment where Honor walks away in some capacity, like we're gonna hear more of why, or the heralds would at least be like, oh, it must be because of this or that. But he's just like, I'm like, as Trevor joked, I'm just focusing on me right now. Like, that's is Honor a diva? Like, what's going on here?
Tanav asked.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
man.
I don't have answers, but I did think it was interesting that Honor was actively here at the Oath Pact. Not like it's not a passive thing for Honor of like he watched the Heralds do their thing and didn't stop them. It's a he was kind of part of the decision of he puts it on them of if you're making this decision, then I can't help you anymore. But he also doesn't try to stop them like at all.
Yeah, you might even be able to argue that he convinced in a way or provided options because they talk about the numbers, right? The like holy numbers or the strong numbers. What isn't it like Ishar's throwing around ideas of saying, well, what if half of us do this? What if five at a time? And then we could swap to the other five to like allow ourselves to like have a break and stuff and not leave anyone stranded and things like that. And Honor's like, no, five is a weak number. You could do a strong number like 10 or 16 or what, 4 and 1. Are those the strong numbers? There may have been another one.
Yeah.
And which and one that was a lot of fun to hear those numbers because I feel like we have some significance to tie to each of those. 4, what was his connection to the 4, like what the 4 elements of Aiden Nalsiam or something like that, the 4 aspects? He gives a title for that.
I wanted to ask you guys about this because it feels like a reference that is meant for us, but I don't think I'm getting it. Here's what he says. 5. No, impossible. 5 is a number of weakness. No symmetry, no power. Perhaps 4 would work. The number of Aiden Nalsiam's 4 aspects. What are Aiden Nalsiam's 4 aspects?
I immediately went to Dawn Shards. Personally.
Ooh.
Because we...
Wait, that's Paul's job, that everything is a Dawn Shard.
Yeah.
You cannot steal his job.
It's been a while.
I can't believe I didn't think of this.
So, I don't know when we get this number, but I've always associated 4 with Dawn Shards. I don't know if that's canonical or not, or if that's assumption. But, like, just over the years, I genuinely don't remember where I get that number from. But I've always thought there are 4 Dawn Shards, and each 4 had to do with 4 shards, therefore 16 shards and 4 Dawn Shards, 4 aspects of Odium, or in an Alcium.
And
that's where my brain went.
So to keep going down that train of thought here, so like we know one of the Dawn Shards is named Change. Right?
Change, correct.
So like you would say there's maybe 4 shards we could kind of bucket under the category of change?
Yes.
Okay.
Just to throw out a couple, invention, ruin.
Ruin.
Like, I don't know. You could probably sit there and come up with 4. But
cultivation.
I was thinking cultivation, yeah.
Well, cultivation would probably be the opposite of change. Like cultivation and preservation would probably go in a different one that would be the opposite of that.
I feel like preservation is trying to not change, but cultivation is trying to change, right?
Yeah, okay, maybe.
In the same way that ruin is changing.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. But yeah, anyway.
That is something interesting. Oh, go ahead, Trevor, sorry.
I've just always made that assumption that 4 shards per Dawn Shard, 4 Dawn Shards. If we're talking about 4 aspects of Aiden Nalsiam, that's where my brain went, was Dawn Shard.
Okay, this is really, really fascinating. I've never heard of these aspects of Aiden Nalsiam before, or if we have, totally blown right by me. And I had not thought of the symmetry of like 4 Dawn Shards, each Dawn Shard being associated with 4 shards. I'm very curious. I don't want to look up anything right now. I'm not going to. But at the end of this book, I will be looking up to see if there's more about this. If someone's... Do we know 2 of the Dawn Shards or just the 1 that is change? We at least have 2 Dawn Shards accounted for. Is that right?
Man, I haven't had a Dawn Shard conversation in a while.
There's so many things to keep track of that I can't, like Elliot said, I'm always the everything is a Dawn Shard guy. And I've been slacking.
We suspect that Wit might have one.
Yes.
At some point.
Correct. And by extension, Sigsil on the Sunlit Man stuff.
Later.
Right, later, at some point. And then there's also high credibility theories that Unity is one of them, and it's talking to Dalinar. So if you give credence to that, we have Change, Unity, Destruction, if you want to talk about Nightblood. There's some different stuff in here that you could throw in the Dawn Shard discussion. I'm struggling to come up with the actual facts that we're supposed to have right now, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think we have the pieces to fully, you know, put that together, but that is interesting and not something that I thought of. So that's pretty cool. That's something I will definitely be keeping my eyes and ears peeled for as we finish up this book and go further into the Cosmere. Back to the one being a number of power. They settle on one. Well, you know, okay. Well, if only because Ishar is trying to do, like, maybe we can do halvesies and swap. They kind of drops the whole swap bit. It's like, well, we just can leave one person number of power, right? 1 for 9, that's a pretty good deal, I guess. We can rewrite our terms to that. And so this is where Tawn is officially left behind. It's that moment, and we don't need to try to throw Honor under the bus or not, but do you think it is like because Honor was like, yeah, you could do one? You know, it felt like a suggestion, even though he was, I guess, just answering the numbers of power. Or is Honor just a, you know, is he still, basically, after this chapter, how do y'all feel about Honor? I think that's my number one question. Like, are we like, you know, Honor's still a good guy? We just don't understand if he has to leave. It's probably for something super important that's like, you know, justified. And, you know, he's not betraying Tawn or telling them to betray Tawn. He's just saying, yep, these are the numbers of power. Or are we like, no, Honor's kind of scuffed and kind of leaving everyone high and dry, and we're largely in this mess now probably because of Honor. How are we feeling on the ends of the spectrum?
I was going to say, on a scale of like Sazed deliberately not interfering to like complete sleazebag, I'm more on the complete sleazebag side at the moment. There's certainly things that could come up that Taint of Ask could explain that I would understand and go more towards the Sazed, like Sazed does in Mistborn Era 2, of like, here's why I'm not doing all this wax. But I don't think that's the case here. I think Taint of Ask is... I think Tanavast has some questions to answer by the end of the book here.
It almost feels like someone or something else has some kind of leverage over him.
Okay, yeah.
And why would you say, I cannot afford to care about you any longer? It's almost like saying, either blackmail or trying to say, like, the stakes are higher, so I can't be bothered with your troubles anymore. So it's either there's a bigger threat that I need to go care about, or someone is like pressuring me to leave you guys alone. Okay. I don't know.
Okay, so just had this thought. I don't think it would be where Honor is being, quote, pressured, but what we do know about Honor, largely tied to oaths, we see this near the beginning of this book or earlier in this book. We talk about Dalinar upholding an oath to the people of Herdaz, with something that is not necessarily beneficial to them and, you know, a bit of a jeopardizing like military risk, but he upholds that anyway because that's the honorable thing to do. Do we think that the reveal could be that Honor has entered into some oath and he is Honor and cannot break it, but that is what has, you know, taken precedence, if you will, over the Heralds is because there's some other oath that he has to fulfill. I don't know what that could be or who it could be with, but I'm like, I'm desperately trying to find a reason why, because I've wanted to like Honor since we started this story, but I'm definitely don't like Honor. You know, I don't think he's doing a great job, but I'm like, there's got to be an explanation. And I don't think the explanation is just meh. No, I don't really want to play with you Heralds anymore. You know, I don't really want to help you guys out. I'm kind of over that. I don't think that's how a shard would operate. I don't think that's, from what we know about shards, I don't think that's the case. So I'm waiting for the explanation. And selfishly, I really want a Tanavast point of view chapter because that's a wishlist thing. And I think that's on my bingo board. So that's what we need. Tanavast point of view where it all makes sense. Is that too much to ask for?
I think that is too much to ask for the record.
Well, whatever.
Obviously, it's to be determined for Tanavast. However, his rope is running out. To me, he's gotten a lot of slack so far, but he's tugging on that slack. What about the Stormfather? Dalinar and the Stormfather go at it again.
I was about to make a comparison. We were just talking about Honor. In this chapter, he says a little bit, but he's pretty nondescript. He's just like, I can't do this with you guys anymore. I gotta go. Stormfather says a lot more words here. Quite a lot more words. But it's been a similar treatment, I feel like, of like, you know, you guys can't do, like, stop doing this, Dalinar. You don't know what you're doing. Just follow me blindly. When Dalinar doesn't, Stormfather's like throwing a fit, you know? And here we have the straw that breaks the camel's back. And the Stormfather not only leaves from Dalinar, but says, like, you're going to die here in the spiritual realm. Worse death than Gavilar. A worse death than you probably deserve. Like, peace out. I'm absolutely fed up with you. Everything about being with you was a mistake. We're talking about Honor kind of being a not so good, like, breakup, like a lame breakup, you know? Like, whatever, I just got to focus on me. This is like the knockdown, drag-out, like, breakup, you know? Like, I'm leaving you, and you're gonna die, and, like, I hate your guts. Like everything bad. Like, this was brutal.
So I got a little confused, I'll be honest, because you're right. Everything that you just said is correct. That they get into the, you're a horrible person, you're worse than your brother, you're gonna die worse than your brother, I'm out. And then, like, a page later, Dalinar grabs onto his bond with the Stormfather, and the Stormfather is, like, really upset about it. I'm like, well, hold on. Didn't we just sever that? That's, like, we just had this whole, like, definitive, I'm gone, I'm out, you're going to die. And then Dalinar feels like the presence leave him or the power leave him, or that there's a line in there somewhere. And then he pulls on the bond and still has his bondsmith powers. I'm like, okay, what are the rules? Was that as definitive as it sounded there or not?
Okay. I agree with you, Trevor. And it's like, okay, where this doesn't feel completely clear. I don't understand how he's, like, grabbing this bond. It says, it compares it to when he, like, literally opens up a perpendicularity, essentially, in Oathbringer. It compares it to that, like, a
great writing,
major... moment. But it does that. So that surprised me that we're getting this huge moment where he's literally reaching and grabbing a Bond, a Niall Bond. Like, that's crazy. What doesn't actually surprise me is that it is still there. Like, it is the, like, I'm leaving you, but I don't know. It makes sense to me that it is still there. Like I imagine it's like the last thread of a rope type of thing. Like, connected enough that they're still going to be somewhat connected for some time. Like, capital C connected, whether or not that they're on speaking terms. It really, every time the more I talk about this, the more I feel like I'm literally talking about, like, a literal, like, relationship breakup. I guess that's kind of almost what it is. It's yeah. Funny. It's kind of odd. But, yeah, I guess I wasn't surprised by that. But this feels kind of comical in a vacuum. He's like, nope, you're not getting away that easy. Get back here, son. And physically grabs the Bond and yanks
the Stormfather. So you're saying back. The Stormfather hasn't gotten over Dalinar yet. And so there's still that, like, I miss you text. And yeah.
Yes. That's essentially what I'm saying is they haven't blocked each other's phone numbers yet.
Got it.
Broken up. So there's still later they're going to have the, like, sit down at the coffee talk about what went right. wrong.
So they haven't changed the Facebook statuses yet, but they're on the rocks.
They have not had the closure yet. Okay, yeah. So their Facebook status is changed, but it's not changed to single. It's changed to it's complicated. Okay,
okay, yeah.
That's where we are. So, yeah.
All right, Elliot. What's your input on the high school dating Stormfather?
Apparently, it's been too long since I was in the dating scene. I don't have any metaphors for dating here, but I do have a lot of questions about this relationship that they do have and where it goes from here. I mentioned at the very beginning. Part of my words for the chapter or things I wanted to get into was, is Dalinar just steamrolling everyone around him? It's easy here to take Dalinar's side. The Stormfather has been lying to us. The Stormfather is concealing things actively. But if this was anyone but Dalinar, I feel like we'd have some beef with the way he goes about this. He knows what he's doing. There's a whole section of the chapter where Dalinar thinks to himself, man, I really only know how to solve problems by attacking them and just beating other people into submission. But that's all I know how to do, so we're just going to do it. And he grabs.
And I'm good at it, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think we've talked about this even as far back as definitely Words of Radiance, maybe even before that. Is that okay? If Dalinar has the right motives, even if he's making the right decisions, even if he's doing the things that need to be done, is physically forcing people to do it okay? It's a tough question.
It absolutely is. And I'm glad you pointed out, if this was a different character, I think we absolutely would feel differently. Thus far, caveat of modern day Dalinar has been one of, if not the most honorable, in the good sense, characters that we followed. In any of the stories we've read, very stand up, does what's right because it's right, and is looking to earnestly unite. He said we can very easily get on board with his mission. But yeah, this raises questions. The Stormfather calls it out. Dalinar acknowledges it. Yeah, I have just attacked things. You know, if you need to go reread the very end of The Way of Kings, you know, he just goes in and busts up Elikar, you know, like, you know, whatever it is. Just goes in there and breaks it up. That's how he rolls. And is that the right thing to do? Is it wrong to do? I imagine we're going to explore that question a lot more here. I'm very curious to see where this goes. We can keep talking about it, but before this episode ends, I want to get some loose predictions at least from y'all. What's going to happen next?
And I think the answers to these questions might depend on, is the Stormfather a good guy? And oftentimes there's varying shades of gray involved there, right? Good, bad, in between. I don't know. Maybe there'll be a bit of a spectrum or a scale there. But we might come to the realization, if we haven't already, that the Stormfather may not really be on the good team, to overly simplify it. And if that's true, if the Stormfather is not doing the right thing, that becomes, if for me, not too much of a stress to justify what Dalinar's doing. Is it okay to force someone who is doing wrong to you to do right? Yeah. Most of the time, yeah.
This is an interesting question that's been posed in this whole chapter of, okay, right now we have a pretty low opinion of honor, and we've been going back and forth debating, talking about the Stormfather being good or bad for quite a while. The Stormfather has always been saying this, like, Dalinar, you just have to trust me. You just have to trust me. But Dalinar says basically, like, you haven't really given me a reason to. Like, we have to be active. We have 10 days. Like, we have to be proactive in finding a solution. And it feels more like the Stormfather has wanted Dalinar to stay stagnant and not be productive in this. But we don't have a definite answer. It's still the motives, the solutions still remain pretty hidden. So it is really like my understanding right now, like if this is day 9 and tomorrow is day 10, where that we're about to go into, it's cemented in my mind that honor and the Stormfather are not on the good guy's side. Like, that is not, that's what I've understood up until this point, but that is not the case going into this day 10. We don't want to maybe get the Shard of Honor on our side, like, type of thing. I do think that we're going to learn a lot more, and I think this will be changed or elaborated on further. I definitely don't think we're going to be left hanging here. This is the last time we'll see the Stormfather or something like that. But yeah, but it's like pretty dire here. I don't know if this is like what's the trope in movies? It's like the third act, like breakup or whatever that happens, like, you know, right before the end of big problems happen.
Anything else?
I don't think so. Other than I think we're headed for answers and maybe fast. I don't know that we're going to have to wait too long. I mean, we do have a lot of pages left, so maybe it'll get dragged out a little bit, but with Dalinar headed pretty quickly towards the Recreants, it sounds like we might get our answers here next 100 pages or so, at least some of them.
I'm definitely hoping for some quick answers here. Also, very quick mention. So Gavinor is in here as well still, and I don't know what to say other than just poor kiddo. I mean, he's just long for a very traumatizing ride. Here he has like a brief bit of dialogue, right? And he's like, I just want to be able to get revenge and fight back, right? Like, that's still his MO.
I still, like, I trust God to make me really strong and can fight well, like he did to you, Grandpa, or his lines like that or something.
Yeah, mostly so.
Okay, we can call it there. Do I have the chapters for next week?
We at least have interludes.
We certainly do have interludes. Elliot, while I'm stalling, your theme.
Oh yeah, thank you for reminding me. Let me talk about day six, because we have wrapped that up now. We are at the end of day six. So yes, mm-hmm. interludes are next, and day seven. But looking back on day six and trying to tie some things together here, this was a shorter day. At least it felt like it. We covered all of day six in three episodes here, and it was only eight chapters or something like that. So quick little segment. But Trevor, you helped me arrive at a theme actually pretty quickly on this, and I like the direction you went in, because we can tie a lot together. The word you threw out is division. And I mean, we've just spent half this episode talking about breakup texts and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of what I'm getting at with the division theme for day six, because you've got a lot of splits that are happening here. The day opens with Nail arriving on the scene with Kaladin and Zeth. And Nail is very much a wedge that is pushing Kaladin and Zeth apart. Whereas in day five and day four, we saw them growing maybe closer together, connecting a little bit. So Nail is dividing them. You've got Zeth's backstory and him splitting apart, his whole family kind of splitting apart and dividing. You've got Zeth and Elid kind of going at it, his sister. Then you've got his father, Naturo, and his mom, Zenid, I think we thought it was, pretty much formally breaking up at the end of all that. Then, of course, you've got Dalinar and the Stormfather breaking up, like we've talked about. But even amongst our heralds here at Ahari Etiam, they're dividing into segments. They're leaving Talm alone, the one and the nine kind of splitting off. And over in Adolin's side, you might even say that the army that's coming to his rescue, his reinforcements, they're dividing. They were supposed to have help from the two other nations that I think I wrote in my notes, Emul and Tashik. I always think of Wookiees when I see Tashik, but I know it's Kashik, but you know. Anyway.
Is Tashik with a Y?
Probably. Anyway, there's some division happening in our armies that were hopefully coming to our aid. And then underscoring all of this, we talked about that in the first half of this episode, you've got Ba'edel Mishram and Odium. Is there division there where maybe previously we thought there was not? So lots of splitting, lots of relationships breaking, division in day six.
Sounds good. I do have a chapter split for anyone following along. Interlude 11 through 79 for next week with 254. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See ya next time.
Toodles.